This is your Sound Off Extra review for WWE Sweet Saudi Shit 5 Staying Alive, or Sweet Saudi Money 5 Dead or Alive, whichever one you prefer. We've got artwork tonight for both of them. And shout out to Steve Mello, who worked on these slides here that you're going to be looking at throughout the show. I got to give him all the credit in the world. He's a clever guy. We put our heads together. Hopefully you can laugh a little bit. I know there's a lot of anger. I know there's a lot of rage. Sometimes you just got to laugh, right? Like, for example, I just watched the end of this show, and all I could do was laugh. What else are you going to do? What, are you going to throw shit? You going to break stuff? What are you going to do? Let me tell you what I'm angry about. And there's nobody else to blame for this but myself. So I'm just going to put it out there right now. Again, I'm going to take the hit on this. It's my fault. Every single time that we find ourselves in a situation like this where there's a match, maybe they bring an old guy back, he's going up against the newer guy, or he's going up against, yeah, the Fiend, right? This character that is very unique and people have invested in. You want to believe that WWE is going to do the right thing. You want to believe that they're going to, you know, put the right person over. They're going to, you know, put the match together in a way that highlights the right person. And on the podcast, I said, I think they'll do the right thing. My prediction was that The Fiend is going to beat Goldberg. He's going to beat Goldberg decisively. What a fucking idiot I turned out to be, huh? And I allow them to do it to me every single time. Every single time I give them the benefit of the doubt, just a little bit. And they make me look like a freaking moron. That's what makes me angry. That's what gets me upset. I do it to myself. And you guys sometimes will tell me, Solomonster, why are you giving them the benefit of the doubt? And I say, just, it makes sense. It makes sense. They're going to do the right thing. And then we see something like we saw here on this show here today. Now, I thought when I was going to come on for this review, I was just going to review a fucking boring show, because that's what this was. This was largely a boring show. But you can have a boring show that's not overly offensive, and then you fly back home, and now, you know, you kind of turn on the jets. WrestleMania is coming up. The Saudi show's behind us. I, honest to God, did not think that they were going to pull the stunt that they pulled there at the end of the show. Soda Psychologist on Twitter sent me this. This was before even the main event. But I thought this was a perfect description for these Saudi shows. He says, these almost don't feel like legitimate shows. Just a smash and grab before rocketing back home. And so to psychologists, you hit the nail right on the head. That is exactly what these shows are. These shows are a smash and grab. They are a hit and run. They want to go over there. They want to make their money and they want to come home. What I don't understand is you've got a guy like Goldberg, who I'm sure made $1 million, $2 million, maybe. God knows what this guy's going to take home for this show. To me, it almost doesn't even matter what you do with him, right? Why wouldn't you want to use him to get over the act on television that you've been pushing and promoting now for what? 4 months? 5 months? 6 months? How long has The Fiend been around for? Unbeaten on television. You're this close to WrestleMania, even if you don't like Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is a current guy. He's a current full-time guy. You could say, send Roman Reigns to WrestleMania. Let him be the first guy to beat The Fiend. You don't have to be the biggest Roman Reigns fan in the world, but at least that makes sense. If you want him to be the first person to get one over on The Fiend. But you bring back Goldberg for one show, giving the shittiest jackhammer that I have ever seen. Of course, everybody will say, hey, Goldberg looked good. Goldberg looked a lot better than he did in Saudi Arabia last time. Yeah, because he was bleeding all over the place. He had his brain scrambled. It would have been awfully hard for him not to look better than he looked last time. He's already got his money. Why do you have to sacrifice current guys on the roster for somebody like Goldberg? Even Brock Lesnar is more of a full-time guy at this point than Goldberg is. Undertaker, he comes in. One move, AJ Styles beaten. Now that, I'm sure, is leading to something. So we'll see how that plays out. Who knows, maybe AJ will go over on him at WrestleMania. But in a vacuum, you look at this one show. Forget what might happen at WrestleMania, okay? Look at this one show. You've got AJ Styles taking a, again, a botched-looking choke slam from The Undertaker and getting pinned 1-2-3. You've got The Fiend, unbeaten so far in WWE. Seth Rollins was so terrified of this fucking guy months ago, he was in the corner crying like a little bitch. He was in the corner, he was screaming, it was like something out of a horror movie. Hey, Goldberg's not afraid. He showed up on SmackDown last week. Yo, Fiend! Fiend standing behind him. Is he trembling? Is he scared? Is he scared? No. Only the current guys on this roster are made to look like bitches. And Goldberg goes in there and he beats him. 1-2-3. Just like that. It almost doesn't even matter now what they do. It almost does not even matter. We got a lot to get to here. I hope everybody in the chat can hear me. I haven't even checked to make sure people can hear me. I could be talking to myself for all I know. So shout out everybody in the chat. Let me know if you can hear me. Hopefully you did, because I don't want to get into all that again. But this is your Super Showdown review. This is your the second live stream, technically, of the day, since I wrapped up the Dynamite stream early this morning. I'm coming back Saturday night, another live stream after Revolution. I'm going to make a prediction right now. That AEW Revolution pay-per-view on Saturday is going to knock the shit out of this show. It's going to be a nice palate cleanser. I don't even care what they do for the finish of that Jericho-Moxley match. It cannot possibly be any worse than what we saw here on this show today. They had audio issues on this show as well throughout the show that started on the kickoff. They never did fix it. That was kind of annoying. There was somebody in the crowd with a Riyadh for WrestleMania sign. Hey, I thought these shows were as big or bigger. Whatever happened to that? I thought these shows were as big or bigger than WrestleMania. What the hell do they need WrestleMania for? Don't be greedy. Polls open. I want every single person listening to this stream right now, please, if you never vote in the Twitter polls, I want you to vote. Go on Twitter, at Solomonster. The poll's going to be up for 72 hours. You can vote thumbs up, thumbs down, didn't watch. I put the didn't watch in there just because this is a weird time for a pay-per-view, so there probably are a lot of people who haven't watched. And I wanted these results to be as accurate as possible. Let everybody know what you thought of this show and why. Leave a comment. Leave a comment here in the chat. When this video goes up later, leave a comment. I want to hear from you. I want you to tell me what you thought of this show. I want you to tell me what you thought of this main event. Let your voice be heard. Smash that like button if you haven't already. And of course, Super Chats. I see a whole bunch of them streaming in. Super Chats are open. We got a whole bunch of new ones in there. You guys support the show. I love you for it. So again, if you want a Super Chat, you'll see them popping up on the screen here throughout the afternoon. Go ahead and hit the Super Chat button in the live chat. Actually, before I go on, let me just knock a few out here because I don't want to, you know, I'm going to be upset if I forget some people here. Man, I gotta cool down here. I gotta cool the jets down. Not too much. I got a lot left to say about this stuff. But Jacob, thank you for the $5. Rocked sent in $2. Tibbs, thank you. $20. Wow, Super Chat. Thank you very much. The infamous GS. He's my boy there. Infamous GS. Thank you for the $10. V. Branton, Mark O'Shea. V. Branton again. Shane McKeever. God, you guys are awesome. Chris Underwood, the antagonist. Michael Cuomo. Holy shit. I'll get to the rest of these later. The kickoff match. The kickoff, you know, it's almost like this stuff doesn't even matter. This stuff is so inconsequential. I almost don't even want to go through the rest of the show here. Like, the kickoff match. The Viking Raiders against Anderson and Gallows. Very basic match. Obviously, the days of protecting the Viking Raiders are no more. They lost here. Magic Killer to Ivar. You know, Ivar is a very athletic guy. It's always cool to see him doing the moonsault off the top. He took a belly flop in the ring. They hit the Magic Killer. I think part of it is just that, you know, Anderson and Gallows, I'm literally sweating here. Anderson and Gallows have been so just beaten down over time. How can anybody take them seriously at this point? So when they beat somebody else, it's almost, you almost look at it like a demotion for that other team. Like, holy shit, you lost to Anderson and Gallows? What the hell happened to you guys? And that sucks. I hate to say that, but that's just the fact. That's just how it is. So I didn't think the match was anything special. I'm doing something a little bit different here in this review. For each match, I'm assigning like a rating to it just to change things up a little bit. So not star ratings or anything, but just on a scale of 1 to 5. I give that a 2.5. That's what I gave the kickoff match. So the pay-per-view itself opened with the first ever Two-Ache Trophy Gauntlet match, AJ Styles, Rey Mysterio, R-Truth, Lashley, Rowan, and Andrade, back from his wellness suspension. No Zelina Vega because she didn't make the trip, although on Raw they were referring to her as, Andrade as her former client. Not that many people picked up on that. That has me a little worried. But she didn't come out with Angel Garza either when he came out later in the show. And really, though, about just real quick here on this Andrade Angel Garza thing, we all know what's going on here, right? I think we all know what's going on here. Here, this picture, once the donation disappears, we got a lot of donations coming in, but once this disappears, take a look at this photo. I had my guy Steve mock this up. This photo right here, I said, I want you to mock this up for me because this is the perfect picture that illustrates what's going on right now in WWE with Andrade and Angel Garza. And this is what happens when you get suspended and you disappear for 30 days. Andrade was, he was everyone's favorite, or everyone said, oh, Andrade, man, they should push him more. He's going to be, he's the future. He's the U.S. champion. Angel Garza comes in. I've been singing this guy's praises since I saw him in NXT for the first time. He comes to the main roster. I don't even think he's technically full-time on the main roster, but he's been killing it. He's been impressing everybody. And there's Zelina in the picture, and this is exactly what's going on here. I think not just with Zelina, but with the company. I think the company is looking at Angel Garza now even more than Andrade and saying, hey, this could be our next big Latin star. And he can speak English well. You know the company loves this guy. You know they must hold that against Andrade. So poor Andrade, but that's what happens when you get suspended. Out of sight, out of mind, somebody else takes your spot, boom, just like that. That's how quickly that can happen. Now, Rey Mysterio was scheduled to be the replacement for Rusev, because it's been reported that Rusev has a back injury, or he went to the company and he was claiming that he had some kind of a back injury. Look, I can't tell you for sure that he doesn't have a back injury, but I do know one thing. He's having some kind of a contract dispute with WWE, or they want to re-sign him and he's unwilling to re-sign. There's something going on contract-wise right now with Rusev. So I have a feeling that has a lot more to do with why we didn't see him here in this match. So they pull him from the match. I mean, look, he's been jobbed out on TV when he's actually been on TV. We don't see him much. But when we do, he's been jobbed out. Rusev has got to be on his way out. He's got to be on his way out. His wife is locked in for 5 more years. Lana re-signed. So Lana is not going anywhere. Lana's in WWE for the long term. But 5 more years of this? Rusev won't have much of a career if he sticks around for 5 more years. So Truth and Lashley were the first two to open this gauntlet. Lana did walk out with Lashley. She was covered head to toe in gold, this gold sequin dress or whatever it was that she was wearing. She never left the stage. She just sort of walked out and then walked right to the back. So Lashley dominates. He charges into the corner at Truth. Truth moves. Lashley posts himself shoulder first. And Truth rolls him up for the first elimination. And boy, do I feel like a fucking idiot. And this is going to be a common theme here. You can go ahead and make fun of me in the chat for giving this company far too much credit. Boy, do I feel like an idiot for thinking Lashley all those weeks ago when they had that triple threat match on Raw. I thought Lashley would win the triple threat and they can do the match in Saudi Arabia for the first time. Just kind of get it out of the way. Because Lashley's wanted this match for years. And there are some people who still would like to see Brock Lesnar against Bobby Lashley. Now, Lashley wasn't going to win. Why not do it on a Saudi show? Two big guys, you know, Lashley gets some offense in there. Maybe he throws Brock around, but in the end, Brock wins. What's the harm in that? What is the harm in pushing Bobby Lashley for a few weeks as an actual threat on TV and talking about his MMA background? No, what do? They use him for the stupid wedding nonsense. All the bullshit they do with him on TV. What is even the point? What is even the point? So that was what I was pitching. Have Lashley win and go on to challenge Brock. Not only did he not wrestle Brock, he was the first one pinned by R-Truth. So Lashley's not happy. He jumps Truth. throws him shoulder first into the post outside and puts him back in and spears him. Andrade is out next. The United States champion is back. They never did strip him of the belt. He probably wishes he wasn't back because after dominating for a few minutes, they bonked heads and Truth fell on top of Andrade and he pins the U.S. champion. So, thanks for coming. When you get suspended, this is what happens. This is your punishment. Who is that? Hold on a second. There was somebody in the, chat here. Hazen? Is that Hazen White? Fuck you, Hazen White. So Rowan is out next with his, if we got a wrench in the chat. Next time he chimes in, block him in the chat. So Rowan is out next with his empty cage. And, he throws Truth into the ring steps. And he knocks over the cage, and this infuriates, this infuriates Rowan. He throws the steps at Truth, gets himself disqualified. So Truth lives on. Rowan, it's interesting to note here, Eric Rowan has now lost his last three TV matches. You know, they were protecting him. He's beaten up jobbers for months. And he has now lost three times in a row on TV. Twice to Aleister Black, and now here to R-Truth. Here in this gauntlet match here in Saudi Arabia. AJ Styles was out next. AJ was great. This was his first match since separating his shoulder at the Royal Rumble. He was all smiles. He even danced. He was dancing around to mock Truth. He did the Cabbage Patch. We've seen him do the Cabbage Patch before. I feel like I've seen him do it on SmackDown once, many, many years ago. The first time I remember seeing him do the Cabbage Patch, it was him and I think Carl Anderson and there may have been a few other like Bullet Club people when Maria Kanellis in New Japan jumped up on the apron. And so we've seen AJ dance a few times before. He looks ridiculous, but anyway, I thought this was funny. And so he's toying with Truth and locks in the calf crusher and Truth taps out. Now, Rey Mysterio was supposed to be the last man out. Didn't come out. Played his music. Nobody came out. Cut to the back, and we see Anderson and Gallows beating him up. And AJ tells the referee, ring the bell. Announce me as the winner by forfeit. Referee says no. The referee refuses. And he calls him one of the worst referees in the business. Mike Rome, the ring announcer, Jim Rome, whatever the fuck his name is, conferred with the referee. He announces that if AJ's opponent does not come out in the next 10 seconds, AJ Styles would be declared the winner. So they cut backstage and they show Anderson and Gallows. They're being laid out. They're being laid out by Mystery Man. And we catch a glimpse of a long black trench coat, and everybody knew who it was. Undertaker's dong hit. Out he comes. 25 minutes later, he finally makes it to the ring. He hits one chokeslam on AJ Styles and almost lost him on the chokeslam. And then he gets down and he covers him for the win. He never even took his hat off. Never took his hat off. Never took his coat off. His hat stayed on the entire... That thing must be glued to his head. And Undertaker wins the Tweet Trophy, which, when he exited the ring, he stares at the trophy, and he's probably thinking to himself, fuck that, I'm not traveling home with this. This thing was huge. It's like, I'm not traveling home with that thing. The hell with this. And he walked off. Easiest payday of the Undertaker's career. How long has he been wrestling for? 40 years? 50 years? The biggest payday in The Undertaker's career. Here's my issue with this. 33 minutes this lasted. 33 minutes. All just to get to those final 3 minutes. And as I watch this, now more than ever, I think that Neil had it right. Neil in North Carolina, he emailed me this week. And he floated the idea of a handicap match. And I am no fan of handicap matches in general, let alone doing it at WrestleMania. But he floated the idea of a handicap match for WrestleMania. As I laugh at the disappointed Solomon, the $5 disappointed Solomonster donation in the Super Chat. I guess never has there been a more appropriate time than this stream for that disappointed Solomonster donation. But his idea was you build to a handicap match at WrestleMania. Aleister Black is wrestling AJ Styles on TV tomorrow, or not tomorrow, but Monday night. So, interesting to see what they do there. Aleister is undefeated. I mean, they could always beat AJ. But then what's Aleister going to do at WrestleMania? So what if somehow they bring Undertaker and Aleister Black together and they take on the OC? Just a thought. I could see that happening. But the thing is, you know, I watched this and, you know, Undertaker in a singles match, if they still want to move ahead and they want to do him and AJ at WrestleMania, you know, they could do it. If it's his last match, that's one thing. We all know it's not going to be his last match. It's just, it's sad. It's sad how he just whores himself out at this point. You know, but hey, you're going to get that money, I guess. You're going to get that Saudi money. I guess you can't begrudge him for that. Chokeslam or no chokeslam, this did not need to go 33 minutes. This gets 2 out of 5 from me, is what this gets. Let me try to play a little bit of catch-up on the Super Chats. Vipul, earlier with the Super Chat donation, and I may not be able to read all the messages right now, but I want to make sure I read everybody off. Joseph Maurer, thank you for the $10. Evan Schaff. Bryant Hoyt with the $8 Super Chat. Bramakian Productions with the $10. Thank you. Raphael with the $2. James Stevenson with the, this says $12.89, so I'm guessing that's a conversion from another currency, so thank you for that. David Moses with the $2. And Brian with the $5.99 Super Chat earlier. And then Scott, what's going on, Scott? Scott Woodford, I met him on the Jericho Cruise. I've met Scott a couple of times. Scott's a good dude. He says he just canceled his WWE Network. I don't want to get into the whole cancel the WWE Network thing. I'll tell you what, though. I tell you, when people are going to start to cancel the WWE Network, if they move those pay-per-views to ESPN Plus or another platform, you're going to see a lot of people canceling the WWE Network. That much I will say. Not this stuff where, oh, I didn't get the outcome I wanted on a pay-per-view, I'm going to cancel the network. No, if they move these pay-per-views off the network to some other streaming platform, that's when people are going to cancel the network. We had Miz and Morrison challenging The New Day for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Miz did the Daniel Bryan kicks to Big E, and Morrison tagged in, went for Starship Pain. Big E moved. New Day hit the midnight hour, and The Miz broke it up. Now, the spot of this match, the craziest spot, the most brutal-looking spot, the dumbest spot of this match, was the truss dive that Kofi Kingston did out over the top rope. You know, Kofi in his matches will do this truss dive where he just dives, he puts his back to the outside, and he trusts his opponent to catch him. Now, normally when he does this, it's a pile of people, 2, 3, 4 different people outside, and they all catch him. Well, this time, the only person outside the ring was The Miz. And I found this hilarious because, if you remember, at least many years ago, Miz had a reputation for not catching people on dives. In fact, I think R-Truth got hurt once on Monday Night Raw because he did a cannonball dive out of the ring. And The Miz just watched him go splat on the ground. He was waiting for Miz, I think, to catch him or at least cushion his fall. And Miz just watched. And Truth just haplessly crashed down to the ground. This was even worse. Now, this, I think, was intentional. I'm not even saying that Miz did this on purpose, that Miz was supposed to catch him. I don't think Miz was supposed to catch him. I think the idea was he sidesteps Kofi, which in a real fight, to be perfectly honest, if you wanted to make this more realistic, why the hell would Miz catch Kofi Kingston? If I'm The Miz, I'm pulling a Samoa Joe, and I'm doing the same thing. I'm sidestepping and going, this guy's an idiot. So let me just make that clear. I do think it was intentional this time, but the fact that it would be Miz as the one that doesn't catch Kofi on the dive, I just found this to be hilarious. But why the hell would you take a bump like this? You know? Looked terrible for Kofi. So back inside, Miz drops Big E with the skull-crushing finale, but Big E kicks out. And Kofi did eventually tag back in. I guess once he got the air back in his lungs, he rolled up Miz for a near fall, and when Miz kicked out, Kofi stumbled towards the ropes. Morrison outside hit Kofi in the gut with a chair, and Miz rolled up Kofi to win the titles. We have new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. I thought this match was good. I thought it was a good match. I would go 3.5 out of 5 on this one. Angel Garza against Humberto Carrillo. This was sad. because nobody in the crowd cared. They were silent for this. I thought the work was solid, as it always is with these two. Garza got a bloody nose at one point. I couldn't see exactly how. I think the announcer said his mouth. It looked like his nose was bloody. Anyway, Carrillo hit a destroyer. They exchanged near falls until Garza, in one of the back-and-forth exchanges, just sat down. And he had the legs hooked that he got the pin, just like that. He pinned Humberto. This was basically their Monday Night Raw match, only not nearly as good. That was a much better match than this was. I'd go 2.5 out of 5 on this. I can't go higher than this. I just can't go higher than that. It just never got into that next gear. Before we move on here, I do want to mention that there is a sale going on. I was only alerted to this yesterday on Pro Wrestling Tees. If you want to buy a shirt from our Sound Off store, you can get 20% off. Just use the code MADNESS. It's the Merch Madness sale. It runs through, Monday. I think Monday afternoon. So that's the code, 20% off. ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. Just a little FYI for those of you who were interested. We're curious. Let's see here. Let's go through some more of these chats. Brian, if I didn't thank Brian earlier, thank you for the $5.99. I think I did mention Brian. CC Titans fan, thank you for the $5. Canadian Oddball with the 1505 said it's the first time he is donating to any podcast ever. Well, that's pretty cool. That's Dave in Newfoundland. I'm sorry. I got to make sure I pronounce this right. I believe it's Newfoundland. Newfoundland, Canada. Thank you for that. We had Desmond McCade. Thank you for the $5. Matthew Meditz or Meditz. $5. I see the Melodious One on screen with the Minoru Suzuki, I will murder super chat. That's me right now, by the way. When Super Showdown was over, that right there, that I will murder meme, that was me. That's still me. I haven't even gotten to the main event yet. Thank you. Thank you for the super chat. And Garrus for the $1.99. Thank you. We had Murphy and the Monday Night Messiah against the Street Profits for the Raw Tag Team titles. I always love seeing Montez Ford get airtime, get hang time on that frog splash. Best frog splash probably anywhere in wrestling at the moment. Best frog splash in the company. He had the match won. Murphy pulls Ford out of the ring. He tries to run away. Dawkins just, he body checked Murphy through the air over the announce desk. And the Street Profits went for a double team on the Messiah. He escaped. And Murphy and the Messiah went for a double pedigree. Profits countered stereo DDTs. Montez Ford went for a toe payout over the top rope. Murphy and the Messiah caught him on the way down and threw him into the barricade. So Dawkins comes off the apron. He takes down, he tackles both heels to the ground and back inside. Murphy distracts the referee long enough to allow the Messiah, because that's what he is, to deliver a stomp to Angelo Dawkins on the apron. Murphy gets the pin to retain the titles. 3 out of 5. I give this 3 out of 5. Just a shade below the SmackDown Tag Team title match. I thought this was good, but nothing more. This was a TV match, if I had to give it a description. I think that's a good way to put it. This was a TV match. Dolph Ziggler against the hometown boy Mansoor. Dolph came out with Bobby Roode, who got up in Mansoor's face before the match and got drop-kicked. The referee sent Roode to the back. So it was down to one-on-one. Dolph took most of this. It built to the comeback. Mansoor hit an inverted slice bread into a DDT. It looked like he spiked Dolph right on his head. And Mansoor heads up top, hits the moonsault for the win. His knees landed right on Dolph's arm. He's lucky he didn't break it. It reminded me of that Kurt Angle moonsault on Bob Holly many years ago on SmackDown. When he broke Bob's arm. Now, remember that story. Bob refused all pain medication. Didn't want to get hooked. So imagine you just broke your arm. They want to give you Vicodin. And you say no. So, hopefully Dolph's okay. But another win in Saudi Arabia for Mansoor. Got his obligatory promo after the match. Was it just me? Or did it seem, when that promo was over, or even during the promo, It sounded like the crowd, I mean, they liked Mansoor, obviously he's the hometown guy, but it sounded like they weren't as into him as they have been on the past Saudi show. So I wonder if even the Saudi people now are kind of catching on to what's going on here. They're like, all right, you're just going to trot this guy out every time and just have him beat random people? You know, going to have him beat random mid-card people? It was Cesaro before. Now it's Dolph. You know, 6 months from now, what's it going to be? He's going to be on the show? Maybe he'll beat The Fiend. How about that? Maybe they'll come back to Saudi Arabia this fall, and they'll just have Mansoor beat The Fiend. How about that? I think that's what's going to happen next. That'll be a big win for him. I give this 3 out of 5. Here's the thing about Mansoor. He's actually really good. If you've seen him in NXT or even on some of these shows, he is really good. It would be nice if they didn't just dust him off twice a year for these stupid shows and they actually started to do something with him on TV. So then we had Ricochet against Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship. In the video package before this match, Ricochet made the comment, because they were really trying to build him up as the underdog. Like he's got a real shot at beating Brock Lesnar. And Ricochet, who I thought was very good in the video package, you know, made the comment, why not me? Why not me? And they flashed... I gotta put this on the screen. This is the picture. And hopefully that's... let me know if it's lagging. If it's lagging, it should go away. Hopefully the stream's okay. But take a look at that picture on your screen right now. This is the picture. This is the graphic that they included in the... It was so quick. It was like not even 5 seconds. I almost missed it. But I saw it and I said, I gotta clip this. And I gotta put this on the stream. They had the audacity to put this picture in there as if there was any shot that this was actually going to happen. This right here, outside of the main event finish, this was the second biggest laugh that I had all day. Look at that picture. And look at his hand, too, by the way. That looks it's very weird. I didn't think that's his hand. I don't know whose hand that is. Look at that fucking picture. Holy shit. Yeah, okay. Ricochet, going to defend the WWE Championship against Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania. That was a laugh and a half. That was a laugh and a half. I love that picture. That's great. So, Brock Lesnar and Ricochet. Ricochet immediately charges in for a drop kick, and Brock just swats him away. And he hits Ricochet with a German suplex. He hits Ricochet with another German suplex. He hits Ricochet with a third German suplex. He hits one F5. And good night, Ricochet. He bounced. You see the replay of that F5? He bounced. And when the replay was over, Brock was looking up at the screen. He was obviously watching the replay. And Brock got a kick out of it. I think Brock probably waited for Ricochet to come to the back and said, good job, kid. He looked amused at the hang time that Ricochet got on that bounce with that F5. Now, I'm not upset at the finish. Nobody in their right mind expected Ricochet to win. And to be perfectly honest with you, I mean, look, I would have liked to have seen him try to get some offense in, but there's no way this match should have gone more than a few minutes. I didn't expect it to go 90 seconds, although I probably should have. But here's my question. Who had the easier payday? I'm struggling between these two men. Undertaker or Brock Lesnar? Because even that chokeslam, you know, you got to think that chokeslam, yeah, probably creaked the Undertaker's knees, probably didn't feel too good. But Brock, he looked like he was having a blast out there. He didn't even break a sweat. He was just ragdolling this kid around. Where did it all go wrong for Ricochet? Remember all the momentum? Remember all the hype around Ricochet when he was still unsigned and he was killing it on the independent scene. The best high flyer anywhere in the world. WWE with this big pickup when they signed Ricochet and everybody, probably myself included, was very excited. Where did it all go wrong for Ricochet? Probably the moment he signed his contract. I would say that's where his stock began to drop. That would be my guess. I completely forgot. I thought at this point we had a SmackDown Women's title match and the main event. My mind must have erased it from my memory. I legit forgot that we still had a cage match. Oh, there's my favorite. There's my new favorite donation, by the way. I mentioned this last night. I was very disappointed we didn't see it. the Seamus fan. I love that donation. But I completely, legitimately forgot that we were getting a cage match on the show between Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin. And when they said, coming up next is the cage match, my heart just sank. I must have just blanked. I must have tried to just, I don't know, subconsciously erase it from my memory. But here's the bigger problem I had with this. Michael Cole had the fucking gall. And I get that he's probably being told this, but just work with me here. Michael Cole had the fucking gall to say that Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin have had, and I quote, an all-time classic rivalry. How many opioids did he shove into his gullet before this show started to come up with that kind of line, that this is an all-time classic rivalry? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Is this how low the bar has now been set? Is this where we are? That this is considered a classic rivalry? What has happened to wrestling? If this is considered a classic rivalry. Roman brought a chain to the ring. He locked the door shut with it. They're wrestling around for a few minutes. Corbin gets the key. He unlocks the door. And Roman catches him before he can exit. Tries to crawl out. Reigns slams the door on his head. Corbin countered a Superman punch after that. Or an attempted Superman punch into a choke slam. So they both climb to the top of the cage so they can get that visual of the two of them exchanging blows. And they're trading blows up 10 feet, sitting on top of this cage. And finally, they are very calmly climbing down. The anti-Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes did a stupid thing off the top of the cage, but it looked spectacular. Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin were a little smarter. They said, we're going to calmly climb down here. The visual of Baron Corbin doing a moonsault from the top of the cage, that just wasn't going to happen. So Roman crotches Corbin on the top rope. He wraps the chain around his fist, and he delivers a Superman punch for the win. A boring cage match. I am beyond the point of just giving a shit about anything that they do when these two are in the ring together. I am so beyond done with this. I thought that Royal Rumble Falls Count Anywhere match was a nice climax to the feud. The visual of Roman Reigns running on the dugout at Minute Maid Field and giving him a spear. I said, that's cool. That's a clever, creative spot. That's cool. Roman stands on top of the dugout. You have all the fans behind him and all around him cheering. That should have been it. That should have been the end. But they could not help themselves because they've got so many shows. What are you going to do? It's not time yet. We've got time to kill. Let's do another match. This match sucked. May we never see these two in the ring together again. 1 out of 5. I give this cage match a 1 out of 5. May we never see these two in the ring together again. The announcers were talking like Roman had finished Corbin off for good. Corey Graves said the same thing. Michael Cole, this is it. Roman Reigns. He finally vanquishes the king. He finally finishes him off. It's over. Here's the problem. Cole and Graves have no credibility. They have zero credibility with the audience, so you cannot believe a word they say. Guaranteed these two are going to both be at it again in the Elimination Chamber next weekend, because we got another pay-per-view. I mean, we got an AEW pay-per-view this weekend, but next weekend is the Elimination Chamber. Not this Sunday, but next Sunday. And I guarantee you, these two are going to be going at it again in the Elimination Chamber match. As sure as the name of my show is Solomonster Sounds Off, these two are going to be in that Elimination Chamber match together again. You watch. Garrus, with the super chat earlier, thank you. Julius Lopez, Reaganomics, 813 with the $2. He says, embrace the rage. It's exhausting, man. I'm embracing it just because that's how I honestly feel, but man, is it exhausting. Doesn't happen very often. I said last night, I said last night that this could be Hell in a Cell all over again. And that's exactly what it was. The rage that you felt from everybody when that show was over. And I feel it now, all the people in the chat, I feel this palpable rage from people. They did it again. Thunder Knight, thank you for the super chat. The Melodious, believe I already mentioned him, but thank you for the $10. NWO Hollywood 45 with the $1.99. Akil with the $6.45 super chat. The 1200 Films podcast sent $10 in. One of our mods, CJ LaChapelle, with a $10 donation, and Jacob Donnelly with the $2. Thank you very much. We'll get to more of these as we go along. I'm very backlogged. Keep sending them in. I love seeing all these super chats. I'm going to get to every single one of them. Just give me time here. We got to keep things moving. Bayley defended her SmackDown Women's Championship against Naomi. This is only the second women's match ever in Saudi Arabia after the last one, the first one between Natty and Lacey Evans, where both of them, if you remember, were crying. They were in tears. They were so emotional. Cole pointed out that Bayley has never beaten Naomi in her career, so that should have been a sign of what was to come. So Bayley, you know, she's in control early on, and Naomi makes a comeback, and at one point, she went for a springboard. I can only imagine she was attempting a springboard clothesline. At least I think she was. It got kind of mucked up a little bit. Didn't look good. Bayley hit the belly to Bayley out of nowhere. Only got a two count. So they had Naomi kick out of the belly to Bayley. Naomi goes for the split-legged moonsault. Misses. Bayley ties Naomi's feet up behind her in her own shirt. And then hits her... The arm trap headlock driver, I believe is what it's called. I mean, she may have her own name for it, but I believe it's an arm trap headlock driver for the win to retain the SmackDown Women's Championship. They tried hard. They worked hard. I just didn't think the match was all that great. I just didn't think it was. You know, Bayley had what I thought was a very good match on TV with Carmella a few weeks ago. But the Carmella-Naomi match wasn't very good, and this match wasn't very good. So I give this 2.5 out of 5. Let us hope that that paves the way for Sasha Banks to come back to TV soon, maybe this week, maybe tomorrow. And they can build to something with her and Bayley for the championship at WrestleMania. And then we come to Goldberg. Goldberg against The Fiend for the Universal Championship. Goldberg... he did not concuss himself. So that's a plus. Goldberg did not concuss himself this time by headbutting the door. So that is a plus. Comes to the ring. We get the Fiend entrance. He comes out with his leather Fiend belt. They get the ring introductions. And from the moment that the bell rings, Goldberg hits a spear. Goes for a quick pin. Fiend kicks out. Fiend does the zombie sit-up, the Michael Myers Undertaker zombie sit-up, puts the mandible claw on Goldberg, and for a moment there, again, me being the naive schmuck that I am, for a moment there, I thought to myself, they're going to do the right thing. He kicked out of the spear. He locked on the mandible claw. He's going to put Goldberg down. He's not going to tap. He's going to pass out, and the Fiend is going to pin him, and he's going to retain the championship. Nope. Goldberg fought out of the claw. He ended up hitting 4 spears. I think it was 4 in total, unless it was 5 plus that first one. I think it was 4 spears in total. I was a little blinded by rage here, so maybe I missed the spear. 4 spears. And Bray kicked out of a few more of them. He put the claw on Goldberg a couple more times, and each time, Goldberg fought through it. He fought out of the claw. And then he went for the jackhammer. And I said this from day one when this match was announced. Now, they said that it was, 60 degrees outside on this show? Oh, it's a pleasant, you know, cool 60 degrees. If you remember on the last show that Goldberg was on, where he had that disaster of a match with The Undertaker, one of the things that, you know, that performance was blamed on, besides the fact that he got his bell rung, was because it was so frickin' hot. And a lot of people commented on how hot it was. It was like 100 degrees outside. I mean, you're in the middle of the desert. You're in the Middle East. What else do you expect? Here they said, oh, it's a cool 60 degrees. Doesn't matter. Goldberg, he looks the part. He's got that explosiveness about him. It's fun to watch him deliver a spear if he's doing it to somebody who knows how to take the spear. He killed Dolph Ziggler at SummerSlam last year. Dolph Ziggler took the best Goldberg spear that I've seen maybe ever. He made it look good. He made Goldberg look like an axe murderer. It was great. But the jackhammer is a different beast. He got the Undertaker up for it. He dropped the Undertaker on his head. Now in that match, fine, blame the heat, blame the injury. As soon as they made this match, I said, if he tries to get the Fiend up in that jackhammer, it is not going to end well. Bray has lost some weight. He has lost some weight from what he used to be, but he's a big boy. And Goldberg is a lot older than he used to be. The days of Goldberg picking up the Giant or Reese or any of these big dudes in a jackhammer, those days are over. Now, he did it to Brock, you know, but even that, think about that. Even that was, what, 3 years ago now? 3-4 years ago? So, of course, what happens? He goes to give the Fiend the jackhammer, and this is probably one of the worst jackhammers that I've ever seen. He barely got this man up for the jackhammer. I don't want to hear, well, you know, he was worn down from the claw and everything else. Goldberg said before the show, he had one mission coming into this pay-per-view. He wanted to erase the memory of the match with The Undertaker. He knew he looked like shit. He wanted to erase the memory of that. I don't think Goldberg wanted to go into this match and deliver a poor-looking jackhammer, and it was. But here's what makes it so much worse. He hits this awful-looking jackhammer, and Bray Wyatt does not kick out. He won the fucking championship with an awful looking jackhammer. And that just makes it so much worse. So now he celebrates with the championship. Goldberg is the champion. Goldberg is the champion. It's like 1998 all over. Actually, not even 1998. It's 2017 because he did the same thing to Kevin Owens. He did the same thing to Kevin Owens. They had, I say him, I mean, he was booked that way, but you know what I mean. They put him over Kevin Owens the same way. I can't even say it's 1998 all over again, because they did it again. And the Fiend gets up, and he's obviously angry. He's standing there. Goldberg's on the rope. He doesn't see, celebrating. He doesn't see the Fiend standing behind him. You think that, you know, Goldberg is going to climb down. The Fiend's going to put the claw and put him down. Even though at this point, he already fucking lost. It don't matter. But nope. Lights went out. Fiend disappears. Lights come on. He's nowhere to be found. He went to go find his crying towel, I guess, under the ring. And Goldberg stands tall as the new 2-time Universal Champion. This fucking company is unbelievable. Unbelievable. When that Fiend character debuted in the summer, I guess it would have been, when we finally got to see the Fiend for the first time, I didn't know what the hell it was. These Firefly Funhouse vignettes, it was very weird. Like, what the hell is this nonsense? Puppets? What is this? And then each week, we saw a new segment. Week by week, we got to learn a little bit more about what the character was about. And we knew that Bray was coming back. Bray showed up. I'm like, this is pretty trippy. But I'm into it. This is pretty cool. I didn't want the Firefly Funhouse segments to end. I really enjoyed them. And I said, they've got something in this character. I hope they don't botch it. I hope they know what they have here. And they do right by this guy. This guy should not taste defeat, at least until WrestleMania, and maybe even go beyond WrestleMania. You know, some of the guys that have gotten over the biggest over the years in WWE are the guys that you kept unbeaten. Just go back and look what they did with Ryback. Even friggin' Ryback at one point was the most popular guy on the roster until he was beaten. And the manner in which he was beaten, it was on a roll-up because of fucking Brad Maddox, you know, videographer to the stars. Then he lost again, and he lost again, and he lost again. And then Ryback was dead. They fed him to John Cena, and that was it. The big guy was dead. But when you keep somebody strong and they go on an undefeated streak, they can get over. And we kept hearing, The Fiend is the number one merch seller in the company. Bray Wyatt, supposedly, he's the top number one merchandise seller. More than anybody else on the roster. More than Roman Reigns. So clearly, they had something with this guy. You're this close. You're not even 6 weeks. You're less than 6 weeks away from WrestleMania. Give him the big championship entrance. And if Roman Reigns wins, look, I can't say that I would be overly enthusiastic about it, but they've kept Roman away from the title picture now for, a year? And I could at least stomach that. I can't say I'd be thrilled, but I could at least stomach that. 5 weeks before WrestleMania, you put this guy who beat Finn Balor, who beat Seth Rollins, who beat Daniel Bryan. Who else did he beat? Didn't he beat somebody else? The Miz. He beat The Miz. Well, that was Bray Wyatt. Same shit. All these guys that he beat, guys that would cower, I can't even speak, I'm so angry. Guys that would cower in terror. You made Seth Rollins look like a punk. It's no wonder that people were booing him and didn't get behind him as a top babyface. It was so bad you had to turn him heel. At least now he's embraced the whole Messiah thing. That's the right role for him to be in. Shit like that was never going to help him. All these guys who sacrificed and looked like fools, looked like idiots on television, running from a guy in a Halloween mask to try to get this guy over. Goldberg does one TV show. He stands tall over The Fiend. It's not like The Fiend got one over on Goldberg on Friday. What happened last week on TV? Oh, hey, it's The Fiend. Speared him down, and that was it. You figure, all right, well, sweet Saudi money's right around the corner. Fiend's going to get his revenge. And he loses. It's like he lost twice almost, it feels like, to Goldberg. So where do you go from here? It almost doesn't even matter. They could change the championship tomorrow night. And I ask you, would that change your opinion on this? If tomorrow night on SmackDown, John Cena is going to be coming back. Goldberg obviously is going to be there. Assuming that they make it back to the States and they don't get held on the tarmac again. They don't get stranded in Saudi Arabia. They use the same airline as they did last time. I'm waiting for those stories to start leaking out that they're trapped on the runway. But if they're able to get back to TV and The Fiend shows up and he just destroys Goldberg and wins the championship back, does that really change anything? The whole point is this man has never been beaten. Who is going to be the man to beat The Fiend? Well, now, that's over. He's already been beaten. Who cares? Wasn't that the point? He was this unstoppable force. Who would be the big baby face to stop him? And it's Goldberg? So what are they going to do now? Is it going to be Goldberg and Roman Reigns? Battle of the Spears? Okay, well then what do you do with The Fiend? Daniel Bryan doesn't have a match. You're going to do The Fiend and Bryan again? Undertaker clearly is going to be occupied doing something with AJ Styles. Unless they just blew off the AJ thing tonight just so they could do Undertaker and Fiend. That's not a match I want to see. Imagine what kind of match that'll be. Undertaker, he does one move. Oh yeah, that'll be a great match. Can't wait for that. I don't know. You know, sometimes I look at this and I go, I don't know what they're thinking. I want to know what you're thinking. Let's take a look at this Twitter poll. This is going to be very interesting. Here's the Twitter poll so far. 35% of you did not watch. 57% of you give it a thumbs down. 7% gave this show a thumbs up. I want to hear from those 7%. What was it about this show that you would consider it a thumbs-up show? Even if they didn't do the stupid finish, if The Fiend put down Goldberg in 2 minutes, I still would have given this show a thumbs down. I thought this show was just a total bore. I legitimately want to know what constitutes a thumbs-up for this show. That's what I would like to know. 7.3% gave the show a thumbs-up. Why? I'm curious. Explain to me why. But I think that the soda psychologist earlier just hit the nail right on the head. These shows are a smash and grab. It's exactly what they are. And if they weren't putting important matches and championship matches so close to WrestleMania on the show, I almost wouldn't care. I don't even think I could bring myself to get upset over it. But they are having matches of consequence on these shows. So you have to watch them if you want to pay attention to what's going on with all the stories. We had a title change on this show. We have new tag team champions on SmackDown. We have a new Universal Champion on SmackDown. I mean, they're just blowing up the SmackDown side. So these are matches that have repercussions. These are important key matches that tie into storylines on television. It's not a glorified house show. You know, maybe at first it was. You can't call a show like this a glorified house show. This was a pay-per-view just like any other. And that was not the finish that they needed to go with. I'm not against Goldberg having a WrestleMania match. You want to do a Battle of the Spears, go for it. I'm not even sure he's going to make it to WrestleMania as the champion. He could lose it back to The Fiend on TV. But what they did tonight was absolutely just brain-dead fucking stupid. And it undoes a lot of the good that they did in trying to get that character to a point where you would say, who's gonna stop this guy? He's this unstoppable force. He's put all these other people down. Who among those on the current roster can beat The Fiend? I know, let's call Goldberg. Sitting on his couch, he's in his garage, fixing cars. Hey, Goldberg, I got an idea for you. Why don't you come on down to Saudi Arabia? Give you $2 million. All you got to do is put over one of our guys. Nah, I'm just kidding. We'll give you $2 million and you can beat the fuck out of The Fiend. How about that? I would imagine that's how the conversation went. So now I get to hear from you guys in just a second. Man. I'm still just thinking and ruminating about what I just saw. It's quite something. GMC, thank you, my friend, for the $2 super chat. I think this one is my favorite. This one, probably the one that you see on the screen right now with Cowboy Brock, Cowboy Lesnar. That's probably my favorite one. Bryant Hoyt, thank you for the $9. Sean Waters for the $10. Devlin Husband, $4.99 super chat. Mike Cochran, $14.99 super chat. Thank you. Notorious MMA 16 with the $1.99. Luis Rivera, $2 super chat. N. Vaginos, the super chat. Professor John Gotti. I didn't know that was one of his titles. I didn't know John Gotti was a professor as well. $20, thank you. Caleb Smith, thank you for the $2.99. Trenton Brown with the $2. And I think I'm all caught up. If I'm not, I'll get to the rest. But let's take some calls. I'm sure there's a lot of anger and a lot of rage, a lot of confusion, and maybe some people who were part of the 7% who actually gave this show a thumbs up. I'd like to hear from those people as well. So let's hit the phones, take a few calls here, and we'll get through this here. 520.
Hey, Solid Monster, how are you doing?
I've had better days. Okay? I'm settling down now. I'm actually calming down a little bit, just a little bit.
Good, because I was afraid that you might have to take medication to calm down after that awful finish.
No, I go for a walk, get some fresh air, and everything will be okay. What did you think of this main event here on this show?
I thought it was shit.
Ah.
Plain and simple.
That's a good word for it.
There are a couple things I want to say. It's funny. I went back and I rewatched the TakeOver Blackpool show from last month, and I go from last night watching Tyler Bate and Jordan Devlin have the best match on the entire night, probably that whole month, and then watching Goldberg and The Fiend, and all of a sudden now I'm sad.
Yeah, and look, it's not, I want to make this clear. It's not that I have an issue with, you know, you mentioned Jordan Devlin and Tyler Bate. Yeah, they're smaller guys and they wrestle a totally different style than you would see in a Goldberg match. I don't have any issue with, you know, bringing in the stars and having big names on the show. But you need to make sure that when you're using them, you're using them in a smart way, or you're not using them in a way that's going to damage your main roster. That's where I have the problem with it. I like seeing people like Goldberg. Goldberg, I think, is still one of the best promos in wrestling. You know, he's got a certain intensity about him when he cuts a promo and stuff. So it's not that I'm hating on all the legends and I'm hating all the old guys, but the way that they're using these guys, and then you turn around and you wonder, how come guys can't get over? How come the current guys, you know, they're stars to a level, to the current fan base, but when you compare them to the stars of old, how come it just feels like they're so much further down? And it's shit like this that you can point to. It's examples like this that you can give people that shows this is why. Everybody will always look at these guys up here, and guys like this, they're up there, but they're never going to be this high. Because we've always been conditioned to think they're one or two levels below all of those other guys. And that to me is it's been a problem in this company for years. This is not a new problem. This has been going on for years.
Yeah, that it really makes me sad to see, you know, the potential of the Fiend to seemingly go down the toilet. But a couple of things I want to get. Two more things. One has to do with the two-wake trophy match. I was bored out of my mind watching that match, with the exception of AJ dancing. I thought that was just hilarious. It reminded me of Brock dancing at the Rumble. But the one thing I noticed, and I was like, why isn't this match that good? And then I figured it out. It's because most of the match is centered around R-Truth. And I love R-Truth, but he's not that great of a worker. And honestly, it made Lashley and Andrade look like punks.
Yeah, I assume they wanted to give R-Truth some shine here in this match because they were promoting this 24/7 documentary that was going on after the pay-per-view. And, you know, he's a babyface. People like him. You want to get sympathy by giving him some hope wins. And then AJ's a real prick. He's making fun of him. So I don't have an issue with that. I even thought there was an outside shot that he might win going into this show, even though I had picked AJ to win. But, you know, 33 minutes of nonsense to get to those 3 minutes at the end. That's too long. So that's why people were zoning out during that match, because that match was just boring as all hell.
Yeah, it bored me to tears. But one last thing before you continue on. You said a second ago how this match, these shows, they're no longer glorified house shows because now they matter on pay-per-view. And I was thinking about it because I remember, I was young when this was going on, but I remember back in the day when WWE would run those UK-only pay-per-views, like Rebellion and Insurrection. And I felt like I was watching one of those old shows where it was like, whether it mattered or not in the grand scheme of things, those shows felt half-assed. It felt like the booking was not there. The matches, whether they mattered or not, it felt like nobody cared. And watching the show, I'm getting the feeling like a couple good matches, but nobody gives a shit about these shows, even if they do matter. I didn't care. Did you?
No, and even the people I think that were there in Saudi Arabia, and I mentioned this during the Mansoor thing, you know, when he cut his promo, it just felt like people were like, yeah, Mansoor, okay. Whereas in the past, he would get this, you would think Hulk Hogan was reborn and was cutting a promo in the ring. So I just think that this was not a very engaging, exciting show. That's just it. From top to bottom, I think the biggest match rating I gave was to the SmackDown Tag Team title match. I went 3.5 out of 5. There wasn't a single match on this show I could bring myself to go higher than that for. So, I mean, what does that tell you? And think of all the talent they have in that company. 3.5 out of 5. And that's not what I would give the show, by the way. That's what I gave that one match. If I had to give the show a rating, 1 to 5, I can't bring myself to go higher than a 2.5. That would be the max that I could go on a show like this. Let's go to 609.
Hey, Jason, it's David, calling from South Jersey.
Hey, David, what's going on?
Almost rolled my phone after that finish. I was just in complete disbelief. I would almost have rather have walked down the stairs and sprained my ankle walking out of my front door than what the finish was.
Yeah, that's how
I felt.
Well, don't do that. That's my first piece of advice. Don't Don't do that. But, yeah, let me just say this. I knew going into the show that it could happen, and I really honestly didn't think they would do it. So when I saw it, my first reaction was I laughed, and then I got angry when I saw the Fiend laying there, yeah, and Goldberg's huffing and puffing. He's got the belt, and, you know, and the crowd reaction was, you know, he got a pop, but not like a humongous one or anything. And then I kind of absorbed what was going on, and I realized, wow, these fools actually did it. They actually went, and they did what I thought that they were too smart to do, and they proved me wrong. They're not that smart at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I just have a couple things. One, I feel like soon we're going to have to start having a conversation about what Bruce Pritchard is doing creatively on SmackDown. I know at the end of the day, Vince always has the final say of what's going on. But at least on the Raw side of things, we've at least had this clear picture of what Mania was going to be, especially when Drew won the Rumble. Like, we knew, okay, we know exactly what we're going to get, what our big marquee matchups are going to be for Raw. They didn't stray away too far. You know, sometimes the obvious answer is the answer, like, for example, with Shayna and Becky. And we're going to have that great matchup coming up. But on the SmackDown side of things, it just felt like we had nothing. And it's almost like they're kind of scrambling here to try and figure out what to do or what match to put on to really bring in some casual fans. But at the same time, you're kind of sacrificing your future investments for the sake of these, you know, or maybe a buzz or a slight bit of a rating with his title change. And since he's taken over creatively for SmackDown, I just feel like nothing's been there to really, you know, there hasn't been an episode of SmackDown where I've walked away going, damn, that was a solid episode of SmackDown. It's been consistently being worse and worse and worse week after week and just dull entertainment. So I wanted to get your thoughts on what you think about what Bruce has done creatively with SmackDown since October.
Yeah, you know, it's so, I'm glad you brought that up. It's so hard to know for sure how much blame is assigned to Bruce Pritchard and how much blame is assigned to Vince McMahon, because SmackDown has fallen. I mean, it's gotten to the point where Monday Night Raw, most weeks now, is a better show than SmackDown. It's almost like the script has been flipped. It was not like this even just 4 months ago. And so you ask yourself, well, why is that? You know, does Paul Heyman deserve a lot of credit for that? Probably. Does Bruce Pritchard deserve blame for SmackDown just being, you know, a creative shithole right now outside of Otis and Mandy? And I don't credit him for that, because Otis and Mandy has been going on for... Otis and Mandy, this little back and forth has been going on since the NXT days. I wouldn't give Bruce Pritchard credit for that. I'd give him credit for not killing it. But the thing about SmackDown is, at the end of the day, it's still Vince McMahon. So if you have an issue with SmackDown and you're not happy with what you're seeing on Friday nights, you can say, oh, Bruce Pritchard, right? I don't know how much influence Bruce Pritchard has. Bruce Pritchard could just be rubber stamping whatever Vince McMahon wants. Or he's writing stuff that he thinks Vince McMahon is going to like. So if you have an issue with the show, it's still Vince McMahon's show. Here's my problem with SmackDown right now. And you hit on this a moment ago. It seems as though they don't know what to do on the SmackDown side of things. Now, we're 5 weeks out from WrestleMania. And we keep hearing that, you know, they had plans, and then Meltzer or this person's or WrestleVote says, well, you know, plans have been blown up. So I do believe, it's not just Meltzer saying this, I do believe that they had plans of some kind for SmackDown that they only settled on fairly recently, and now they've decided to go in a different direction and blow it all up. 5 weeks before WrestleMania. I would imagine tomorrow night, it's going to become clear what direction they're going in. John Cena is going to come back. It doesn't sound like he's going to be working with Elias. Who knows? Maybe he will. Maybe he won't. Maybe the match is Bray Wyatt and John Cena. Now, I thought that if that was going to be the match, the Fiend has to be the champion. Because the whole point is, John Cena is going for title number 17. Is John Cena going to be the first person to beat The Fiend and break Ric Flair's record? Or is The Fiend going to put him down and get revenge for what happened at WrestleMania 30? I could have gotten behind that story. I could have gotten behind that story. Now they can't do it. Because he's not the champion. So what's the point? But I look at the SmackDown side and I just say to myself, this is how little kind of forethought, it seems like, they put into what they are going to do on that side at what is supposed to be their biggest show of the year. Raw seems to have their shit together. We're going to have Lesnar and McIntyre. It looks like they're going to do something with AJ and The Undertaker, Randy Orton and Edge, Becky and Shayna. So their top stories, and even Rollins and Owens, the Raw side seems pretty solid. The Raw side seems pretty set. What the hell is going on SmackDown? That we, you know, these parts are still moving like this. You've now changed the championship. Yeah, maybe now people are like, oh boy, it's unpredictable. I don't know what's going to happen. But to me, that's a terrible sign. That is a terrible sign. It's a sign of just, they don't know what the hell they're doing on the SmackDown side. So yeah, you can blame Pritchard, but blame Vince McMahon. It's his show. Nothing happens without his approval. If you see it on TV, well, look what happened tonight. Look what happened today. That doesn't happen unless Vince McMahon signs off on it. You want to blame somebody, blame him. That's what I would say.
Yeah. There are points to that. The last thing I had was Sam Roberts on his latest podcast actually had a segment where he basically talked about the finish of this match basically happening, and he said he wasn't a fan of the idea, but let's be realistic. It is a possibility that Goldberg may win, and if he does, what's going to be, you know, the best outcome coming out of that? So I want to hear your thoughts on what he had to say, which is basically you can still do Fiend versus Cena. In essence, that Cena comes out tomorrow, Fiend attacks him, and basically brings up everything that's happened to Bray since that defeat at WrestleMania 30 and him avenging that loss.
Yeah.
And then we work our way from Roman and Goldberg for the Universal title because, you know, they probably figured if they did Roman versus Fiend, which we all thought was going to happen, they probably thought, well, you know, the crowd is probably going to turn on Roman again if we do that match. So why don't we give them something that the crowd can get behind with Roman versus Goldberg for the title? And essentially, you don't, much like Hell in a Cell, you don't bring that up when it comes to the Fiend matches. You don't bring up how Goldberg won the title in order to kind of stay away from that finish. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on that. And again, big fan, and keep up the great work.
Thank you. I can't get behind the idea of the Fiend and Cena without that title on the line. I think that's an important part of the match if you want to do it. You know, if you want to add drama to the match, you've got to go to that stipulation where, what is John Cena fighting for? Why is he coming back? He's got to have a reason for coming back. He's been gone for so long, he didn't have a single pay-per-view match in 2019. And now he's coming back here on SmackDown tomorrow night. He's going to wrestle at WrestleMania 36. Why? That's the question that needs to be asked. Why is John Cena coming back? What is his motivation for coming back? And it should be that he wants to go for the championship. He wants to go for it, and however you want to have him go on TV and explain it, it's important to him. It's important to his legacy. We know in real life, Cena doesn't give a shit. In fact, I've heard the opposite. I've heard that Cena does not want to win title number 17. He does not want to beat Ric Flair's record. I don't think any of that matters to John Cena at all. And I think he would be perfectly fine going in there and doing the JOB for The Fiend. That's the match. It's like Undertaker and John Cena. For so many years, they had the chance to do Undertaker and John Cena at WrestleMania. But that match only makes sense if The Undertaker still has the streak. Because there was a time when John Cena was beating everybody and people hated his guts. And it's almost the opposite now. If you'll notice where people, I miss John Cena. I wish John Cena would come. Now, not everybody is like this. But even I find myself sometimes missing John Cena from TV. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, but there was a time where he was beating everybody. He beat Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 30, and that pissed a lot of people off. He beat Rusev at WrestleMania 31. Boy, this guy was on a roll, you know? He had three WrestleManias in a row. He beat The Rock, he beat Bray, he beat Rusev. Who knows who he would have beat at WrestleMania 32 were he not hurt. And so, during that period, if Undertaker, let's say, still has the streak intact, you know, let's go back before WrestleMania 30. John Cena's unbeatable. Well, The Undertaker's never been beaten at WrestleMania before. Let's do John Cena versus The Undertaker. You don't even have to have a title on the line. The streak is the only title that you need to worry about. and the streak is on the line. And I said this at the time when I was talking about, you know, this is an idea. Just imagine people losing their minds when John Cena hits that attitude adjustment and goes to pin The Undertaker. And for even just a split second, people think, holy shit, they're going to have John Cena be the one to break the streak. Undertaker respects him so much, he's going to let Cena beat him and he's going to break the streak. And just the dramatics, the theatrics of the match would have been perfect. The moment that the streak was broken, that was it. You just eliminated all the drama from that match. So when they did the match at WrestleMania 34, it was shit. It was a one-sided squash. Cena got virtually no offense in. It was like a three-minute match. It was the polar opposite of what a lot of people would have hoped that match was going to be. I feel the same way about Cena and The Fiend. You want to do the match, the title has to be on the line and the story has to revolve around number 17. And then he can lose. Cena can lose. He can fall short. He's not going to be the champion again. He's going to go off to make his next movie. He doesn't have time for that. So no, I really don't have any interest in seeing Cena giving his win back to The Fiend in just a straight one-on-one match. You could do Roman and Goldberg without the belt being on the line. Now, would they do Roman and Goldberg with the idea that they would be worried if they did The Fiend match that they're splitting the crowd? So not everybody is going to be behind Roman. They might boo him. They like The Fiend. Maybe in their mind, this is a safer match for them to do. You know, I don't know. I can't get in their heads. I'm only speculating. I don't know what the thought process is in switching it here at such a later date. I'm not convinced, by the way, that if they do Goldberg and Roman, that everybody is going to cheer for Roman just because he's our guy. He's full-time. Goldberg's not. He beat The Fiend. We hate Goldberg. I'm not convinced that that's going to get everybody behind Roman Reigns. But if that's their idea, then God bless him. I guess we'll see if it works. But Fiend and Cena, to me, it only works if you've got that championship at stake. And it's not the WWE title. I understand it's the Universal title. But, you know, with John Cena's reigns, they kind of lump them all together. The big gold belt, for example, that's included in his championship. Just like Ric Flair, you know, Ric Flair, his titles, they count the WCW, the NWA belt, and they count the WWE championship as well. Let's read off some more of these before we get to more of your calls. Lone Wolf, thank you for the $5 super chat. And we've had a whole bunch of people sub to the channel as well. Paul, Connor, Desmond, Booker, had a lot of new subscribers. If you're not sub to the channel, I don't know what you're waiting for. Hit that sub button. That way when I go live and I get new content up, you'll be the first to know about it. Let's go to 202 here on the air.
Sup, Soma Monster. It's Garrett once again.
Hey, Garrett.
Yeah, I did not watch the show, but I have to say this, though. You know, after being through a stressful midterm week, it's good to hear you know, losing your mind, so it kind of like clears the stressful week it has been for me. So,
oh well, I'm glad somebody's in a good mood. That makes me happy.
Yeah, it's good to hear. But for a suggestion, though, if once we get to the Sweet Saudi Money 6, I suggest the title should be Sweet Saudi Money 6, The Revenge of the Prince. So that could be like a suggestion for the next title.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I want to throw it to everybody in the chat, everybody listening, or even on Twitter. Start sending in your suggestions, because we're going to be getting Sweet Saudi Money 6, I'm sure, in a few months. And we'll have to come up with a new tagline for that pay-per-view. So let me know your suggestions. What do you think the subtitle should be for Sweet Saudi Money 6? Garrett just gave me his suggestion. I want to hear from everybody else. You can send that into me, but go ahead.
But, yeah, I have not been watching any of these Saudi shows after the first one. You know, ever since the reporters thing, I just made it a point never to watch any of these shows. But either I'll watch this review and I'll watch Botchamania to watch any, like, highlights from the show. But that's my extension of the exposure of this show. As far as the Fiend stuff, ever since Seth Rollins held the cell match, they just ruined it for me. Watching tonight, I'm like, yeah, now he's like Dark Order levels of not me caring about his feuds or what he's been doing on TV. But it's sad. It's sad for Bray Wyatt because, you know, the potential he had back in 2015, the potential of The Fiend, and then later, both times, they screwed it all up for him. you know, as far as if I could compare this, this is pretty much like the Braun Strowman, you know, Brock Lesnar match happened. I think it was like the last Saudi show a few years back when they had five F5s on Strowman, and would probably be the perfect time to put the Universal title on him, and instead he lost. And so basically Strowman and Bray are basically now afterthoughts on their own TV show. But overall, so the fact that they have 5 weeks out of WrestleMania, considering the fact that their ticket sales reportedly are being bad at the moment, you would think they would actually have their shit together for them to try to combat ticket sales. But if their solution is going to be Goldberg versus Roman Reigns, they're not. That is not the right way to go to actually fix that problem. So, all in all, for the show, I'm just looking forward to Revolution, even though I'm sure they're going to be screwed the moment that WWE does these pay-per-view shows. Then, I mean, their pay-per-view number is going to be down because they lost the UK deal, but it's going to be down even worse considering the WrestleMania, SummerSlams are going to be also $50 like then. So, all in all, I'll just wait till Revolution. You know, the show is going to be forgotten within a few days anyway for us, but I'm sure, especially for Bray Wyatt, I'm sure we're not going to forget that part.
No, we're not. I got to let you go, but we're not going to, believe me, this is going to be something that people remember for a while yet. And, you know, you're going to have different opinions. Some people maybe liked it. Maybe some people, there were 7% of people in the Twitter poll last I checked. I'll see what it's up to now. There were some people, unless they were just trying to be contrarian, who obviously liked this show. And right now it's an even 7%. 57% did not like this show. And 36% have yet to watch this show, and they may never watch this show. And if you haven't watched it and you're waiting for my recommendation, don't. You didn't miss much. But there you go, 7 up, 57 down. Some people may have liked this show, but by and large, looks like people were not very happy with what they saw here on this pay-per-view. Let's go to 803. We'll take a few more.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. Who am I talking to?
Hey. This is Steven.
Hey, Steven.
Hey, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of WCW right before they went out of business. Pushing the old guys over the young guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, the big difference, of course, is, I mean, WWE's not going out of business. WWE, actually, unlike WCW, unlike WCW, they know how to make money. So they're not going to be going anywhere.
Yeah, but they don't know how to make stars.
Well, that is a problem. You're right about that. I can't argue with that. They certainly have a problem creating new stars. That is true.
I mean, it seems like this has been this way since Brett Lesnar come back. It's been this way. Push the old guys over the new guys.
Anyway, any other questions here before we? Because I got so many calls, I want to try to get to as many as I can.
Nah, I was just gonna say, man, this show sucked. I mean,
this was
a bad show.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. All right, my friend, I'm going to let you go, but thank you for calling in, Steven. Call in again soon. We're live every week. We've got the Dynamite reviews every Wednesday. We're going to be live Saturday night for Revolution, and then for Elimination Chamber in, I can't even say 2 weeks. It's less than 2 weeks away. We've got another pay-per-view. It's the never-ending cycle of pay-per-views here with this company. Let's go to 570.
Hi, Sound Monster. This is Chris calling in.
Hi, Chris.
How you doing?
Good.
Hi. I was just watching the show today, and I just couldn't help but be flabbergasted that with all the, you know, with Goldberg winning, I was like, I like seeing him back every now and then, you know, to see the stars come back every now and then. It can be entertaining sometimes, but, you know, They do have trouble creating new stars. I'm just surprised with all this money that they throw around with these Saudi shows that they haven't gone back Stone Cold for a match or something. You know. I mean, I would rather see Stone Cold wrestle than Goldberg, to be honest.
Well, I mean, look, he's been consistent now for 18 years, and I actually have more respect for him for it. I'm sure he's been tempted. I'm sure the company would love to have him back, and he has said no. He's done, and now he's, what, 55, I think? What is Austin now, 55?
Yeah.
56?
Something like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, he looks good. He's in shape. He kind of looks like the Stone Cold of old. We don't need to see Stone Cold back in the ring.
No, I mean, I was just thinking with the whole creative new stars thing or lack thereof, could you imagine back in the day when Stone Cold was on top back in like 98, 99, if they brought back like Bruno Sammartino or something like that? That's what I sort of think of now when I see like Goldberg,
That's a great point, and I've made that point on the podcast over the years. I said it's very strange the times that we're in now, because if you were to go back 30 years, if the same thing was happening back then, when they were trying to make Bret Hart a star, and they're trying to make Shawn Michaels a star, and they're trying to make, not Randy Savage, but name other guys from the early 90s period, right, who they were trying to at that time get over as star, Mr. Perfect, whoever. But what if on TV every week, they were trotting out Bruno Sammartino and superstar Billy Graham and Lou Albano and Antonino Rocca and all these people who were wrestling matches and were beating them? What if Mr. Perfect was on TV one week being beaten by Bob Backlund? That wouldn't have done a lot of good for Mr. Perfect, right? So those guys, when they were coming up and they were being made stars in the WWF, you know, they had the opportunity to grow and to actually become stars. These guys now, in a lot of cases, unfortunately for them, they don't have that same luxury because they've done such a poor job, this company, of making larger-than-life, truly big new stars. They lean on the old guys to come back, and it just it doesn't do them any good. So that's a great point, because people don't talk about that a lot. You never would have had a Stone Cold or a Rock in the Attitude Era if they were bringing back guys who, you know, were wrestling in Allentown at you know, championship wrestling tapings in the mid-80s to put them over guys during the Attitude Era.
Well, that's the thing. I think back then, I don't think Stone Cold would have had... I think he had enough balls, I should say, I think he would have shot that down, at least the best that he could have. You know what I mean?
I
don't know.
You would hope so. You would hope so.
Yeah. I think back, like, when Bob Backlund, they brought him back when he beat Bret Hart at the One Survivor Series, only to lose the title days later to Diesel. I was like, that I actually understood. There was like a storyline thing to it, you know. But beyond that, I'm like, no, forget it. I'm so close to like not even watching WWE anymore that I thank God for AEW. That's all I got to say.
Well, thank you for the call. I know you're not the only one who feels that way, Thank you for calling up and venting. I hear that opinion from a lot of people, but he made a great point. I'm glad he brought that up, and I've said it before. It would be the equivalent of in 1998 when Stone Cold was on the ascent, and they had him in angles every week on TV with Vince McMahon, and they actively were trying to make this guy the biggest star in the business. And Vince McMahon, the owner of the company, went to lengths of embarrassing himself on TV and allowing Austin to pour, you know, beer on his head and beat him up and make him look like an idiot, you know, in an effort to get this guy over. And they did. And a lot of guys got over. A lot of guys are still riding on the success that they had 20 years ago. You know, when they make appearances now and they go to conventions and stuff, they have podcasts. They're still riding the coattails of the success that they had 20 years ago, 25 years ago. But what if you brought in a lot of those old guys then? You know, would Stone Cold be as big of a star as he is? Would The Rock, you know, be the biggest star in Hollywood like he is right now? Would we be having DX reunions every 3 months? Every 3 years? I'll say every 3 years. Every 3 years, would we be having DX reunions? I'm trying to think. I keep saying Bruno Sammartino and Bob Backlund. I know there were other stars back. Larry Zbyszko. Larry Zbyszko was, you know, Larry Zbyszko was doing commentary on Nitro at the time, and actually he did wrestle a little bit. He had a feud with Scott Hall, but they were good friends. You know, they wanted to work together. But it would be like that. But that's why you made stars then and now. You know, it's not. I can't just blame it on bringing back the old guys. These people just don't know what the fuck they're doing. That's a bigger problem. They don't know how to make new stars. And when they do make one, like they did with The Fiend, they shoot themselves in the foot. I don't understand. I just don't understand. I really just don't get it. Let's do a couple more, and then we'll wrap up here on a Thursday afternoon, 850.
What's going on, Solid Monster?
Who am I talking to?
It's the farting phone guy from Florida again.
Ah, the farting phone guy. Hopefully you've got that under control.
I have some Miralax help with that.
Good. That'll clean you out.
You think you're in a bad mood? Let me just rant for a little bit here. So I didn't go to sleep till 5:30 last night, only to have to wake up at 11 o'clock this morning to catch this awful pay-per-view. So it starts out with the Gauntlet match. I watched that. And then was it the tag match next with Miz Morrison and all that? I watched that. End up falling asleep through the other couple matches, only to wake up to Baron Corbin versus Roman Reigns. And surprisingly, it actually wasn't Michael Cole that was repeatedly saying, the big dog, the big dog. It was Corey fucking Graves. But honestly, I would have much rather have seen Roman Reigns crawling out on all fours with the chain around his neck, with Michael Cole walking him like the big dog that he is, that he proclaims to be.
Well, I think he already does that. I think he does that in the back before every show. They have a routine they go through, you know, because he's got to walk the dog. So Cole, you know, he has to pull himself away from his commentary prep, and he goes off with Roman in the corner somewhere and cleans up after him. I think he's got him taken care of.
It's almost like, was it 2010 when Michael Cole was just like all over The Miz, and he was just like, The Miz, The Miz, The Miz. And it's almost that same shtick again, and it's like, why? Why do we need this again? Then we have the skinny Rosie O'Donnell defender title against Naomi. That was a snooze fest. Move on from that. Then we get to the main event. And I, like you, was thinking, you know, they're going to do the right thing. They're going to keep the title on The Fiend, and, you know, we won't have to see Goldberg after this pay-per-view or whatever, and boy, was I wrong. Not only did The Fiend lose to a very sloppy, almost looked like a suplex to me, but they had Goldberg fighting out of the Manimal Claw, what, 2-3 different times, and I'm like, what? What's going on here? And I was like, okay. So he speared him 4 times, but he gets up. And I'm like, all right. This is kind of like what Solid Monster said is going to happen. Quick fire offense, but eventually The Fiend will win. No.
Nope.
He's getting up after the spears and all that.
Yep.
Only to get suplexed, jackhammered, and then doesn't kick out.
Yeah, you know. I thought, okay.
Let me
just say this. So many guys, and I think of the Daniel Bryan stuff and the lashings he took, you know, in that strap match at the Royal Rumble, and, you know, being put down with the mandible claw, and the guys that worked to really get that hold over. You know, he got it over in a way that it hasn't been over since Mankind used it over 20 years ago. And so those guys on the roster, and these are the full-time guys, made those sacrifices to help get this character over and to help get his move set over, you know, only for this to happen. You got to ask yourself, you wonder what's going through their heads. You know, is it really, because some people are going to say, oh, you know, of course, all the marks and all the smarks, they're upset and they don't know, you know, what good business is, and Goldberg is the right move, and the wrestlers are probably laughing.
It's not even about that.
It's not. No, you're right. It's not about that. It's not about that. And I guarantee you, there's at least some guys on that roster. They may not say anything publicly, but they're watching this going, what the fuck did I just see?
The fact that we had star talent, like you said, putting over The Fiend, people that are there every single day only for a part-timer like Goldberg to show up and just shit all over it.
Yeah.
Going back to the steel cage match real quick. You were talking about it with, the week before last when the AEW had their steel cage match and how they had the stipulation where there's no escaping. You know, that to me, that made the match even better. And then not even, 5-10 minutes into this steel cage match, they're already trying to climb out. This is supposed to be a rivalry, but yet they're both trying to escape the cage. Like, what the fuck is up with that?
I'm sure Jim Ross, if Jim Ross was watching this, he'd be throwing furniture in his house.
And then I don't know if you caught this at the end of the main event. They're talking about, oh, is Goldberg going to show up on SmackDown? And then Corey Graves has the nerve to say, well, he better, you know, it's not a part-time gig being a champion. And I'm sitting here thinking, what the fuck has Brock Lesnar been doing?
Well, he would
showing up whenever he wants to.
He wouldn't say that to Brock Lesnar. I know that.
I mean, why would you say it to Goldberg?
Well, but you're assuming that things that Corey Graves says on commentary are going to make sense. See, that was your first mistake. You have to go into these shows assuming that both commentators are going to say a lot of stupid shit. And it's like I said before, they have no credibility. You know, and it's not all their fault. It's not all their fault, because a lot of this dumb shit that they say, it's part of the show. They're being told to say it, or they have somebody in their ear. I get that. Sometimes they'll go off the cuff and probably editorialize and just say dumb shit on their own. But they have no credibility with the audience. So you have to go into these shows and expect and assume that you're going to hear a lot of really dumb stuff from these commentators. But thank you for the call. I had to let you go because we have, I want to get this guy on the line. He's a big friend of the podcast. You may hear his name each week. He's the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine. I think Harrison is on the line. Are you there?
Hey, Soul Monster.
What's going on?
How's it going?
Good.
Not much. I can't believe you recognize my number. That's.
I do recognize it. What's on your mind?
I'm going to keep it brief and short, very simple. The match between Goldberg and The Fiend was disappointing. I had no high expectations going into it, and I missed the whole show because I was in school, but just the match was disappointing. And the one problem, I think the problem with what is going on with WWE, is that the storytelling, when you look at AEW, Cody and MJF, they tell a great story, and yet there's no title on the line, and this Revolution pay-per-view, everyone's looking forward to it, whereas The Fiend and Goldberg, Ricochet and Lesnar, I'm not looking forward to that because I know what the outcome will be, especially with that Lesnar and Ricochet match. No one had any interest towards it. So I just think that's the issue. You know, you've got to get people to care. If I brought my best friend over and said, hey, we're going to watch some wrestling, he's going to be asking me, he's like, hey, like, why does this matter? And I just think that that's the problem that's going on with WWE at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a few different problems going on at the moment, but that's one of them.
Yeah. I know you're pretty busy. I mean, I wish I could talk to you all night. You got to take a lot of phone calls. But thank you for putting me on your show, and I love the podcast, man. Keep it up.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling in. He's a big supporter of the show. I shout him out on the podcast each week. He's one of the people that keeps this going and listens every week, so I appreciate that. Let's just do a quick final check. I have to get out of here, so unfortunately I can't get to everybody who is waiting in queue, but I do want to flash these poll results here one last time just to... Let me tell you something. This slide here with the Fiend wearing that shirt, this freaked me out. When Steve first sent this to me, after we were talking about doing these slides, and I saw this picture, this freaked me out. It's just, but you can't help it. You can't look away. You can't help but not stare at this thing. The Twitter poll, still 7 up, 57 down, 36, 3,000 votes in. Go vote, please, at Solid Monster. Let your voice be heard. I want to know what you liked and what you didn't like about this show. And I also want to say thank you to Kenny Manuel for the $5 super chat earlier, since I think I missed him. So I wanted to make sure I got him in there. And all the new people. You see the little blue shark. Dancing blue shark means that we have a whole ton of new people subbing to the channel here this afternoon. So welcome to all of the new listeners. And we're going to be going live again on Saturday night, as soon as AEW Revolution goes off the air. And I hope it's not too late, but I think it's an 8 p.m. Eastern start for the main card. So it could be going to midnight, but whenever Revolution goes off the air, and we'll know if it's Jon Moxley or Chris Jericho leaving with the AEW World title. I'll be going live here on the channel for a full recap of the pay-per-view. And then, of course, Sunday, each and every Sunday, is a brand new Sound Off podcast, episode 641, dropping on all of the usual platforms. That's coming up, as always, on Sunday. So that's about it for now. I've vented. I've stated my case. I've let everybody know what I thought about that horrendous finish to this show. A show overall that I thought was just very bland, very dull, very boring. And the SmackDown Tag Team title match, match-wise, was probably the best thing on the entire show. I don't think there was anything really better than that the entire night. Thanks for joining me, everybody. Have a good rest of the night, and I will see you Saturday night for the AEW Revolution review. Until then, take care, guys.